This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, a show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy.
Hello everyone and welcome to Well, Well, Well show, brought to you live every Tuesday from midday. My name's Jessie and I'm here today with Adam, who is co-hosting with me. How are you today, Adam?
I'm awesome, but I just noticed that it's starting to rain outside.
And it's already
crappy because yesterday was so good.
I know, it was good, wasn't it? We'll just have to put up with it again. That's Melbourne for you.
Exactly. But at Well, 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 if you actually haven't tuned into us before, we talk about topics that relate to the GLB to our community, so we are all about sex, health and well-being.
Absolutely. So can you tell our dear listeners what we've got on the show today?
No, I cannot. Actually, I can indeed. Oh, really interesting show today, guys. So today we've got Wendy Brokenshire from the CASP team. Now, that's an acronym. We do love an acronym.
We do.
In our community. This is Counselling, Alcohol and Other Drug Services Program. And that's, so Wendy's going to come in and aid us in a discussion around the ALICE study, which is another acronym, but I'll get into what that means later. But the study basically looks at alcohol use amongst same-sex attracted women, as well as other factors including mental health, sexual orientation, discrimination, and cultural norms, just to name a few little things. So it'd be very interesting to get into a study like that. And I'm all about research, and I haven't read that before, so I'll be very interested to pick Wendy's brain about it.
I did read a little bit of the summary of that, and I thought it was really quite interesting. So I'm quite excited to be discussing that. But before we get stuck into things, I did just want to mention Northside Bazaar. I know a lot of you guys are aware of that, and we're actually partnering up with Joy and the Lead. I don't know, did you go last week, Adam? I mean, last year?
No, I haven't been before.
Well, apparently it's awesome, and apparently the Lead always, you know, has throws on a good time as well afterwards. So it's an all-inclusive event that aims to raise funds for both Joy and the David Williams Fund, which supports and aids people living with HIV. It's a really fun day where Henry Street between the Lead and Masonic Hall is transformed into a marketplace.
Yes, they basically had to triple the size of it. So rather than just having it at the Lead, there's a little side street in between that and the Masonic Hall. So they've taken over the Masonic Hall, the Lead, and the street in between. So it's going to be huge by all accounts.
So it's going to be like a proper fair, like outside.
Well, it's going to be bizarre.
It is.
And it's Northside, so Northside Bazaar.
There you go. There'll be music, there'll be beer, auctions, and a lot of fun. And it's held on Saturday, the 10th of October from 2 till 8 p.m. Now, one of the biggest reasons I am doing a plug today is because there are only a few stalls left that are going at about $200 a pop. So
which is such a bargain for the amount of people you're going to get coming through and having a look at your stuff. Like, absolutely.
Absolutely. I think really encourage you guys to all go for it. So if you would, and also looking for any goods, products or services you'd like to donate or auction off, please do let us know.
Auction.
How would you say it?
Auction.
It's auction.
Auction.
It's like water. Anyway, let's getting back to it. We would love it if you donated any kind of products or service to auction off. Mm-hmm. You can contact Alan at VAC or email contact@northsidebazaar.com.au. And that's bizarre spelt B-I-Z-A-R-R-E. And Adam, could you please let our listeners know how they could get in touch with us today if they wanted to ask any questions or join in the conversation or tell us that things are awesome?
Absolutely. There's a plethora of ways.
A plethora.
So you can like us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/joy. Or you can call 1-300-JOY-949 to speak to a real live person, unlike when you try to call some banks. Or you can send an email on air at joy.org.au or send an SMS to 0427-JOY-949. And we get both emails and SMSs directly here in the studio. So if you want to ask a direct question of our guest, of ourselves, or even just to suggest potentially a topic that we should be covering, and no, we are not going to be covering the election in this hour. just send us an email or SMS and we'd love to hear from you.
You want to hear about the election, just jump on Facebook. My entire feed is just flooded with it. And this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Well, Well, Well team with you today, and I'd like to say a very warm welcome to Wendy Brokenshire. How are you today, Wendy?
Hi, Jess. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Very well, very well. Glad to have you on board.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you feeling about coming onto radio today?
Well, it's certainly a different experience. I'm a bit excited and I feel like I'm in good hands. So let's have a go.
Yeah, let's have a crack.
Well, let's see how you feel by the end of the show. But it's a promising start. Ominous. Promising start. But look, Wendy, before we get you in, or before we get you to start talking about the reasons like the ALIS study and things that we've got you in to talk about today, can you tell us about your role and some of the work that you do with the Victorian AIDS Council?
Sure. So my primary role with the Victorian AIDS Council is as the manager for the Counselling, Alcohol and Drug Services Program. And we, as you said earlier in the intro, we love an acronym.
So we do.
That all spells CASP.
It actually took me a while to figure out what CASP was.
Yes, I can understand that, Jess. So it rolls off the tongue when you've been around for a little bit longer in the CASP program. So some of the things that we do in the counselling services area, which of course has been a part of BAC for a very, very long time, is we deliver individual counselling, couples counselling. We run some specific therapeutic groups for people. One of the groups that's running at the moment is Fearless, and the Fearless group assists people to think about and maybe find some strategies for dealing with internalized homophobia, which we know can be a really difficult issue for some people in our community. And the really wonderful aspect of that group is that often it's a mixed gender group, so we blend it with men and women, and that enriches the experience for the participants. Yeah. So the alcohol and drug services area is a newly funded service for the Victorian AIDS Council. It's a statewide funded service for LGBTI community, and in that service you can also people can also receive individual counselling. We do some family inclusive practice. We can do some brief couples work.
What do you mean by family inclusive? So kind of like everyone comes in together?
Family
members?
It depends on, I mean, because we take a client-centred approach, of course, so it depends on our primary client in terms of, you know, what their personal goals are for their treatment. But on occasion, we find that people really welcome the opportunity to invite their significant others, whether that's a partner, whether that's a family member, or, you know, sometimes for members in our community who are a little disconnected from family, sometimes it can be just a really dear friend who's a key support person to them. I guess the generic term is family inclusive practice, but, you know, in our community that's very broad. We also deliver therapeutic groups in the AD program. One of the groups that's becoming very well known and very well received by community is the Rewired group. Yeah. And that group focuses on supporting gay and MSM men who might be wanting to think about changing changing their relationship with meth use. So that's becoming a really interesting space and a valued space, I think.
Definitely.
For community. And the other group that we're trying to get off the ground for same-sex attracted women is a group called Drink Limits. And I think that's something that we're going to talk about
further on. Yeah, we're definitely going to discuss that in more detail later on. Mm. But in the meantime, I think we'll just jump into discussing a bit of the ALICE study. So I'm guessing your day is quite different from coming into a radio show today is very different from your everyday work life, isn't it? But let's try and kick this off with the ALICE study, which is another acronym. Adam, do you care to tell our listeners what the ALICE study
stands for? So, Alcohol and Lesbian/Bisexual Women, Insights into Culture and Emotions. Yep, that's it, ALICE. But I think it's always really good when you can simplify something that's actually quite a complex research area down and go, we're going to call it the ALICE study, and this is what it stands for. And yes, everybody hates an acronym because we've got so many of them.
But it's great.
It's easy. It's just easy.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the main aims of the study when I found out we were going to be talking about today, and I sort of had a bit of a look it up, was the complex relationship between hazardous drinking, depression and anxiety in same-sex attracted women. So can we just explore that a little bit, and what were some of the other aims of the ALICE study?
Sure. So the ALICE study, I think, is a very unique piece of research, and we're very fortunate that it's an Australian-based study as well, because that always enriches the, I guess, the application of the knowledge that comes out of the research when you're trying to deliver services, as we are at VAC and in other parts of the AOD sector as well. So some of the other aims of the study were to, as you said, explore the complex relationship between hazardous drinking and depression and anxiety in same-sex attracted women, but it's also to investigate the degree to which these relationships are shaped by the intersection of cultural norms, systemic sexual orientation and discrimination.
Not a very easy topic to pinpoint, is it?
No, it's quite complex. But one of the things I value about the study is the diversity of age range that the study tried to bring into scope.
Great.
So I think that's a really important aspect of the outcomes that we're learning more about. For example, our younger same-sex attracted women and how they're engaging in alcohol use at a much younger age than their heterosexual peers, and some of the contributing factors around that naturally being associated with identity and issues of coming out and sexual orientation. And I mean, adolescence in and of itself can be a really tricky time, and when you're trying to navigate your way in the world and kind of present yourself to the world
Absolutely.
For the person you are, then, you know, I guess the other aspect of adolescence is that it's very common for young people to experiment with alcohol and other drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for them it does form part of their cultural norms to some extent.
Yeah. So looking at some of the results from the study, it did say that about 40.2% of same-sex attracted women were considered to have problematic drinking, I guess is one of the terms they were using. What do you think they considered like problematic drinking? Because across obviously the board, it's very different what someone says 2 drinks a day as opposed to 6 drinks a day. It's hard to gauge, isn't it, as to what is part of your cultural norm and whether it's a problem or not.
Yeah, look, I agree with that, Jessie, and I'm not sure that the study was trying to be completely specific about how to define what problematic drinking is for any one person. I think there are just some common themes that go with alcohol and other drug use if it's becoming a problem in your life. And some of the things that might indicate problematic alcohol use might be poor sleep patterns, and the role and effect of that. Other more serious issues around problematic drinking might lead really far down the spectrum, where you're actually engaging in intimate partner violence. So I think the spectrum of what problematic can mean is, as you said, really individualised.
Yeah.
I think the other element, though, of the study, which is incredibly important to highlight, is that the study illuminated for us that same-sex attracted women engage in alcohol use for exactly the same reasons as mainstream society does, and that's around social connectedness. It's everywhere in our
to relax.
It's everywhere
it's
in
every
our
every birthday, every Christmas, yes, every function, every party,
every weekend.
Yeah, so it is obviously ingrained in the culture. So to sort of remove yourself, or to, I guess, have the ability to do so, is actually going to be quite difficult.
Mm.
Absolutely, and so the important message through the study is to ensure that we don't further stigmatise same-sex attracted women because they choose to engage in alcohol use.
Yeah.
The more effective message is if they are defining their alcohol use as being problematic. And sometimes when you are using alcohol in a problematic way, you may not actually really identify that for yourself.
Yeah.
And those indications might come to you from external sources. It might be that you're not quite turning up to work every day on time.
Of course.
A dear friend is saying, you know, maybe you've had enough. You know, those sorts of messages, those cues start to happen.
Yeah.
And the most important thing is that women know how to seek support if they themselves start to identify they have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. In your experience, though, so we know that they looked at anxiety and depression as well. Would you say have you seen, or, you know, in your experience, that there's actually a relationship between anxiety and problematic drinking?
Look, I think there are a number of studies that are relevant to our community in the last, I'd say from 2013 through to 2015, that indicate that for the LGBTI community, if we take sort of alcohol and substance abuse off the table at the moment and just look at mental health as a as an overall area of health and well-being, the studies that are indicating that our community are highly represented with anxiety and depression disorders include the Ellis study, they include Private Lives 2, and also the first national trans mental health study, which was done in 2013. So all those sort of subsections of our community are highly represented for reasons of discrimination and stigma, minority stress, all those sorts of cultural things that happen for our community contribute to people, I think, not feeling quite connected to community and feeling somehow different. So those sorts of lived experiences can create anxiety and mood disturbance and that sort of thing in a person. If you overlay that with alcohol use and or drug use, then what we know about alcohol in terms of its interaction with the central nervous system, for example, it's one of those paradoxical things. When you enjoy alcohol, you may experience feeling calmer or elevated mood or more relaxed.
It's actually a depressant on your body, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah. So the depressant aspect of it then causes other problems for health and well-being. But one thing that I don't think is that commonly known is just how hard the body has to work to metabolize alcohol and move it through the system. Yeah. And therefore, if you are a regular drinker and you're putting that level of stress on your body and asking your body to do a lot of extra work, at some point it's going to interact physiologically as well. And the other thing about alcohol use and anxiety is that often you'll find that people who experience elevated anxiety symptoms because of alcohol use, they're more likely to have had an underlying anxiety issue that is possibly undiagnosed.
Yeah. It's and a bit of a downward spiral, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. We're getting a little heavy now, aren't we?
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's all very good information. So we can just keep continuing the discussion if we want. So what I was going to get into next was, what kind of stresses do same-sex attracted women experience to a greater extent than the general population? I know that you did kind of touch on it before, but yeah, is there anything that you can talk about in regards to that?
Apart from the things that we'd mentioned earlier around you know, stigma and discrimination and things of that nature, I do think one of the challenges for same-sex attracted women, if they are seeking to engage with health professionals, for example, I think that it's not an easy road for them to find the help that they're looking for. And certainly one of the key indicators in the study would say that one of the most helpful things we can do for women is to encourage them to connect with a GP and to develop a really good relationship and trusted relationship with their GP. And that in and of itself, when you're thinking about trying to present yourself to a health professional who is perhaps in a mainstream clinic or something like that, sometimes people can feel a little uncertain about how they might be received and worried about that kind of underlying sort of homophobia that may come, you know, to them through their health professionals, perhaps lack of education or knowledge about same-sex attracted women.
Yeah.
So I think it's multi-layered and there's not, you know, there's no one thing.
For sure. Well, definitely we'll be continuing the discussion. We'll be right back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
Well, 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 on Joy 94.9, and we're chatting with Wendy, the manager of the CASP team, and that we explained what that was before, another acronym, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about some results from the ALICE study, which was looking at alcohol, depression, and problematic drinking habits for same-sex attracted women. And I guess one of the things that you'd alluded to before we had listened to that song was about accessing mainstream services that might not be able to cater to the needs of same-sex attracted women. But what are some of the main barriers for same-sex attracted women or the GLBTI community overall in terms of accessing the services that they need?
Well, look, I think that's it's a good question, and it's a broad question, and I don't think it's a one size fits all. But certainly, some of the research that I alluded to before, some of the findings in that, I think, is that the main barrier seems to be that finding health professionals who are well informed about same-sex attracted women's lived experiences or relational issues or health issues, those sorts of things, can be tricky. And also there aren't enough services outside of, say, GPs, for example, which is a really good entry point into other health healthcare pathways. I don't think there are enough services out there that feel that they have enough training and capacity to deliver same-sex attracted women, say, counselling services or treatment services and things of that nature. However, in the follow-up study to the ALICE study, which is Rainbow Women and Their Help-Seeking Behaviours, which has just been released, the lead researcher on that study is Dr. Ruth McNair, and some of the information coming out of that study would indicate that same-sex attracted women actually, not unlike LGBTI more broadly, I think, really prefer to connect with peer-based support systems or services. And so I think that's a really important message to get out there to the broader sector, whether it's the AOD sector, mental health sector, or community health sectors, to engage with same-sex attracted women and other members of our community. Peer support programs seem to be well received. And that's certainly, and I know we're going to talk about drink limits in a little while, but that's certainly been the immediate feedback to us from same-sex attracted women who did participate in that program earlier this year. One of the core reasons they chose to participate in that program, yes, they wanted to look at their alcohol use, yes, they wanted to talk about things like social anxiety, but more importantly, they wanted to receive a service from an organisation like VAC who understands same-sex attracted women's
needs.
Understands them.
Yeah.
And I know that's for some people listening, they might not necessarily connect VAC with same-sex attracted women's services per se, but it's certainly a space that, you know, we're moving into in a very slow and respectful way, and drink limits is one of those programs that we're trying to deliver.
And so you mentioned drink limits, so I guess we can just jump straight into that. What is drink limits and what's it all about? Because you sort of alluded before that you were getting it up off the ground and getting it started. So give us the 411.
411. It sounds like a code from Safeways or something.
Give us the lowdown.
So just to, I guess, put drink limits in context a little bit. So the VAC, the CAS program, receives Commonwealth funding for a project called the Altered States Project. And that project's brief, one of many, is to increase the training and capacity across AOD and mental health sectors to be able to deliver services to LGBTI community members, specifically about alcohol and substance use and mental health. So the jargon term is co-occurring or dual diagnosis. So we decided that we needed to step up into the space and also start delivering some treatment services apart from delivering training out into those sectors.
Mm-hmm.
So the treatment services come in the form of therapeutic group-based programs, and Drink Limits is one of those therapeutic group-based programs. It's an 8-week program. It happens in the evening once a week, obviously, for 8 weeks.
And can anyone join? Well, anyone who identifies as a same-sex attracted woman? Or?
Well, it's really designed to target alcohol use and co-occurring mental health.
Yeah.
So the way that we invite people to think about joining the group is that they can just ring us directly and offer an expression of interest, but we go through a clinical assessment with them because it really is important to determine if a person is suitable for the group or if the group is actually a suitable method of treatment for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some women with more complex issues, sometimes some women will benefit more by having some individual counselling first, and then that sort of starts to prepare them for the opportunity to be engaged with a group-based program.
Yeah.
Other women are a little more resilient, perhaps, and a little bit less vulnerable in being speaking in group-based settings and things like that, and so they're more able to come into the group straight off the bat. So some of the things that we look at are certainly things like relapse prevention, triggers, health and well-being around, you know, so we don't just focus on all the negative stuff. We also focus on helping women develop strategies in how they can improve their quality of life across the range of areas.
Mm.
I'm not sure if that's answered your question.
Yeah, yeah, no, that absolutely
has.
Sounds
like a really thorough process as well, which I think is great.
Yes, definitely. Whilst we, you know, it's not really meant to be a social group. It is a treatment program.
Mm.
You know, if we develop the program further, it may take on more of a peer support model. And you know, that would be actually fantastic if we managed to develop it to that stage.
Absolutely.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well 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 on Joy 94.9. We were just talking with Wendy Brokenshire, counsellor from the CASP team, about the Drink Limits program. And if any of you guys are interested, you can go and check out our website for more information on vac.org.au/drink-limits. So you can go check it out. Or if you want to call us, you can call us on 9865-6700 and just ask to speak to someone from the Drink Limits program.
Is it okay if I add something to that?
Of course.
Absolutely not. Outrageous.
Taking liberties. So that's certainly the most direct ways to learn about drink limits or get information about drink limits. But in terms of the alcohol and other drug service at VAC, for the individual counselling and family inclusive practice, the things I referred to earlier, the best way for people to contact us is through a 1-800 number. And the 1-800 number is 1-800-906-669, and that's a VAC specific phone number, so it's a statewide number, so anyone from the LGBTI community who's thinking about their alcohol use or their drug use or both, or just want more information about our services, if they choose to ring that 1-800 number.
Great. And what's that 1-800 number again?
1-800-906-669.
Okay.
The centralised intake service that supports us with that number, they will automatically know that it's a member of our community calling, so there won't be any awkward moments, there won't be any awkward questions other than the normal awkwardness around giving personal information that everyone has to give.
Yeah.
But it's a really useful way of accessing our AID services as well.
Great. Cool. Thanks for that, Wendy. Now, we were also moving on to talking about the Mind Out initiative. Do you want to mention about who it's aimed at and what is it exactly?
So the National LGBTI Health Alliance developed the Mind Out project initiative. So Mind Out networks, if you like, are Australia-wide. I'm not sure they're in every state. Certainly we support, or we auspice the Melbourne-based Mind Out network in our state. So the purpose of it is, I think, to connect professionals, whether they're part of the mental health sector or any other health sectors, to connect people in a meaningful way to talk about the treatment needs of LGBTI people, specifically around mental health and suicide prevention. And if I could just go back a little bit, before we were talking about the barriers for same-sex attracted women accessing services, the National Alliance created a wonderful tool for all professionals, which is called Working Therapeutically with LGBTI Communities. And it's a booklet that you can download from the National Alliance website. And for any private person out there, private service provider, psychologist, counsellor, any organisation that's thinking about moving into, you know, the rainbow space, that particular resource is absolutely gold, and I would suggest that people get their hands on it.
Right.
So the Mind Out Networks are designed to bring a range of health professionals together to examine some of the health and well-being needs of LGBTI communities. It's a timely conversation. We're delivering the third network meeting this evening from VAC.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very fortunate tonight that we have Dr. Ruth McNair as our guest speaker, and Ruth will be talking about the findings from the study that she headed up just recently, the Rainbow Women's study around help-seeking behaviours.
Great.
So we're really pleased and privileged to have Ruth, because she's an incredibly busy woman.
Mm.
But she was very gracious and very willing to come to our network meeting this evening.
So is it more for, I guess, people who are already working within the sector to find out what other programs and services are out there, or is it also a little bit of professional development? So as you said, Ruth's obviously coming out, or Dr. Ruth McNair is coming out tonight to talk about the study, so that would be based around the findings within the research. But does it speak more broadly, or is it sort of more of a social kind of a, oh, and what do you do, and this is what I do, and sort of kind of building those informal networks so that you've got, I guess, an allied health service referral pathway sort of in your Rolodex?
I couldn't have said it any better myself. It's all of the above, actually. And before we launched the first one, we had the back support to the MindNet Network in all across Australia is assisted by the Mental Health Providers Network, which has been around for a long time, since the mid-2000s. So we enlisted their support at the recommendation of Sally Morris, who's the National MindNet Project Officer, to help us run a poll, and, you know, good old Survey Monkey, it's just never dies. So we got feedback from health sector professionals and some private people who connect with those sectors.
Yep.
What is it that you would like? How would you like your network to look? What would you like it to look like? So anyway, all of the things that you've referred to before, Adam, but the most key thing that people wanted was they wanted high profile people who are doing exciting things, like Ruth McNair, to come and deliver and provide that professional development capacity.
Yeah, excellent. So if you're interested in that kind of side of things, mental health, same-sex attracted women, or you're in the allied health industry, you know where you should probably be tonight. Just wanted to quickly follow up with a question about the LBQ Women's Health Conference that ran in March this year. That was
very exciting.
So successful, and there was even quite a bit of a waiting list, wasn't there, for people to get in, but it was a really exciting conference. What's being done in following that conference, and where to go from here?
Yeah, Jess, it was really well received. We were so thrilled, and we were very well supported with our partners who contributed to the event. And Beyond Blue was a very important partner in that event. GLHV, the Rainbow Network, the Australian Lesbian Medical Association, and ACON all came on board as contributors to the conference. It was VAC-led, of course, and it also came. The idea of the conference actually came out of the Altered States project that I referred to earlier. So what's happening in the space now is that we're in planning phase for Women's Conference March 2016.
Amazing.
Which is also attracting the same level of interest from partner organisations. And bigger and better. Well, in fact, it will be, because it will be a national platform.
Awesome.
And that was
so
one
great.
Of the things that came out of the earlier conference this year, is that same-sex attracted women, bisexual women, community members, service providers, everybody said that this was a space that had been much needed and well overdue, and we were just thrilled with the response.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really interesting, and obviously there's such a need for, I guess, research and focus on same-sex attracted women in terms of, I guess, mental health issues or drinking and whatnot, and I think VAC seems to be covering the gamut in terms of therapeutic groups or individual counselling or family inclusive counselling, as you mentioned, but also putting on things like this, the Allied Health networking thing tonight. I can't remember exactly what that's called.
What is it? LGBTI.
Mind out. How can I forget? Mind out. Well, it was out of my mind. So
there you go.
But no, it seems like there's really interesting work, and there's obviously quite a way to go. But I think it's heading in the right direction. Do you think?
I think it is, and what I'm excited about is the collaboration across different organisations who are part of the LGBTI sector. There's such a goodwill, particularly in the women's conference space, but more generally, I think that organisations are starting to come on board with the fact that, I think actually, if we think about the recently announced LGBTI task force for the Victorian State Government, and you've got Brenda Appleton heading up the task force with Minister Foley, and we've got two subsections to that task force, the Health and Human Services area and the Justice area, and I believe Anna Brown's heading up the Justice area, and Dr. Ruth McNair is co-chairing the Health and Human Services part of the task force. I think all of the collaborative work that's been before that, the announcement of that task force, is a really good indication how the sector can work together to effect massive change.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Wendy. We'll just we'll be right back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Hi there, Jason Gipps here, Joy 94.9 production manager. Are you a regular listener to our Joy podcast service? Like what you hear? Tell us. Email production@joy.org.au. Tell us something that you've heard that you've particularly enjoyed, and we'll pass it on to the volunteers of our podcast service. Our Joy program production team is made up of around 30 volunteers, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, email production@joy.org.au. And if you love what we're doing, why not support us as a Joy member? You can become a Joy member anytime, online at joy.org.au or call 1300 569 949. Thanks for supporting the diverse sound of a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
And this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And I guess we just wanted to keep Wendy around so we could say a very big thank you to who?
Yes, we've always wanted to use that.
And I think it's obviously, we probably could have done an entire show on every little thing that we've tried to cover today.
Yeah.
But obviously, I think it speaks volumes to the work that yourself and other people within the GLBTI sector are actually doing for same-sex attracted women, just in terms of professional development and service provision. So I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very exciting space to be in, and it's very privileged work that people are collaborating in.
Yeah.
And I'm very blessed to work with a team of people in my program area, the Counselling, Alcohol and Drug Services area at VAC. I've got a terrific, really diverse group of professionals who are highly committed and extremely talented at what they do. So I'm blessed as a manager.
Lovely.
Oh, that's great.
Well, this has been Well, Well, Well for another week. I can't believe that we've flown through it so quickly.
Indeed.
It's been really good and really interesting,
It was good to talk about same-sex attracted women. That was really good. So thanks again, Wendy, so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
My name is Jessie and co-host Adam.
Hello.
Part of the Well, Well, Well team from the Victorian AIDS Council. Take care, everyone.
And we'll be back next week.
Next week. See ya.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.